But
okay.
they do
Yeah,
this
so
ritual.
ritual.
Yeah.
And then into what has quickly become perhaps the film's most talked about scene, probably.
Yeah.
They raid a village, and it's done in maybe two or three very flowing long takes
Yeah.
where it's people, one of the things I saw this with friends, and the first thing one of them said was, I thought that was a very video game movie, which wasn't a bad thing, but
I can
it
see that
is.
though. That's sort of like the quick time event, scene
Yeah.
where it's like hit triangle when you get to the top of the wall and
Well, yeah, because there's this sort of and the sort of just
well, I also think it's the
perspective.
lack of cuts, really. Because,
Yeah, and the fact.
like if this has been edited from different angles, then you're like, oh,
Ooh.
film. But when it's like sort of just like a continuous, almost tracking shot, like that mimics the sort of like immersion of a video game where they don't have to
Right,
cut.
well, but also just because it's tracking one character's
Right, that
perspective, you
too.
know,
Yeah.
like it's all pivoting around Amleth in these scenes where you're not.
Wow, back in my day, we just called that a
A tr
POV tracking shot.
yeah, but it's interesting. No, I mean, that's what I thought,
I mean,
but
I personally, I play a lot of video games and I didn't think of it like a video game movie.
I didn't
But I also
either.
just know that video game movies are bad, so maybe that's my thing.
It just struck me as interesting, and this
But
is
no,
not
it is an
a
interesting like point.
topic. I'm
No,
not
absolutely.
qualified to speak on this at all because I don't really
And
play many video games, but it's
neither
interesting.
am I.
Yeah, well.
I'm absolutely not, you know, it's like it's not even me being Roger Ebert or something like that. You know, and just being dismissive about it. I've literally never
I
played
mean, I could
a
see it as sort of close to the newest God of War they did, but obviously that's slightly different because it's more like literal monsters in there you're fighting and stuff.
It's just interesting to me how that is going to increasingly, you know, they're going to cross-pollinate each other more and more
Oh, they
as
already
time
are,
passes,
yeah.
right?
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, well, up till now, it's been, cinema, video games borrow from cinema. That's the model, right? But I don't think it's this film specifically, but I'm interested to see how those points of comparison
I mean,
develop in the
I like to
future.
play. There are certain games that are very like filmic. Like Supermassive has these like horror anthology style games. They're not perfect, but it's basically like you're watching a movie, and then occasionally, if you're running, you gotta. It's called a quick time event. You hit a certain button and you jump over the thing, or if you don't hit it right, you trip, and then that affects the outcome. It's sort of like a choose your own adventure, but like as a video game. So that's like I think the closest we have right now, at least with video games, to like video game
No, I'm
films.
yeah, no, certainly, certainly.
Yeah, and you know, and certainly I think that it's a better choice for Eggers to not do it in a long shot, you know, to
Yeah.
not, you know, make people have to go, okay, what's happening in the foreground
Oh, that
that's
fucking
going on in the
continuity is a
background? What's
nightmare.
the,
Yeah. No, that's a
oh
good
my
call.
God, you know, it's like, you know, it's like I know that he probably wanted to do that, but you know,
Well,
but
'cause then you
he
gotta,
held
I mean, I've
off.
been an extra, so I know you literally have to, every single extra, you have to be like, you have to perfectly remember where you were, exactly what
Yes.
you were doing. And most of those extras are getting paid minimum wage and are kind of doing it between jobs, so they don't give a shit.
Yeah, although it's interesting to think about how much this must be like reenactment or sort of like you know, like Civil War reenactments or you know,
Yeah.
either in Britain or in America, you know, or you know, this idea that almost like you're acting out the ghost of an event that might have happened.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there are like two things that I want to talk about just briefly. The first one is that I don't think it's made really obvious, but one of the primary things that Vikings did was that they would rent themselves out. Groups of Vikings was that they would rent themselves out to other groups of people who were trying to invade a place or hold a
Okay,
place
that makes
or.
more sense now, because I remember the people on horseback coming in after the fact and
Yeah, that's
sort of
right.
being a tiny
And
bit confused.
Yeah, exactly. And those horseback people are the people who obviously paid the berserkers to be there.
Okay, so they're like contract killers, sort of.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're mercenaries.
Mercenaries,
you know. And indeed, because this is Rus, because this is a Slavic country, probably their local, you know, tribal leaders who have a problem with another bunch of tribal leaders, and you know, taking over this village has something to do with something. And at one point, we see a woman who's like a shield maiden who's riding by and is going, "No, I only want strong ones, not weak ones. I want strong ones." You know, it's like this is her payment. The payment is the thralls.
Yeah.
They take the thralls and then they sell the thralls to other people, including, say, Fjolnir.
I do like that it gets into the hypocrisy of it all, because it gets into how he's seeking revenge for his father getting killed, but then he's going off and killing fathers and children.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I mean, he's not specifically killing children.
But... You know, they don't matter. None of them are kings, you know?
Right.
None of them have anything to do with his, you know, with the kingdom that was stolen from him.
Right. I mean, I do like skipping ahead, obviously, spoilers, but I do like that sort of the turn is that.
Yes.
The very, you know, revenge is never what you think it's going to be. Like, it's never how you've pictured it. There's always other angles to it you weren't able to see.
That's right. Because you're a child.
Well, yeah.
This is the thing. He left when he was like, what, 12?
He looked 12, yeah.
Yeah. He left when he was 12. He really doesn't seem to have advanced much in terms of the way that he sees the world since then.
No.
He's become a gigantic man who, you know, can kill anything that's in front of him. You know, he's become a berserker. And a berserker is a human weapon that you turn loose. You know, it's like it's like he's become a cave troll.
A little bit.
And you know, he's not even a war leader. He has a war leader.
He doesn't direct the violence. It's like he's like a wind up toy almost, where you just set it in one direction and just let it go.
I know. Yeah. I do love like the choreography they use though, like him jumping off of the wall onto someone riding by on a horse.
Exactly. It climbs the wall. It jumps on the horse. It punches somebody else's horse. The horse falls over, squishes the guy. You know, it kills as many people as it can get its hands on. And then when it doesn't have any weapons anymore, it bites a guy's throat out. He's not a person. He's, you know, it's very funny. Yeah, he's a tool. And it's very funny to me that, you know, after the most horrifying moment of the battle, which is where they separate people from their children and their older people.
And they put them in a house and light it on fire.
In the house and they light it on fire. And it's just like happening in the background and nobody gives a shit, you know?
Yeah. Elam Klimov. I mean, it's,
yes, it is.
The come and see references on some level. I mean, I was thinking, oh, people will just compare it to come and see because there's barn burnings and everything, but also just these very frontal close-ups where it's a character looking directly into the camera and then also these artfully composed long takes of violence and brutality.
I mean, I got a little bit of Kubrick in there.
Yeah,
certainly. But
I mean, there's only so many ways that you can do violence.
That's true.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
And we've talked about them.
Exactly. And it's interesting also. That dance that people play, that people have to play, people have to do, where it's like, if I go too far in, then people get used to it. And if I go too far out, then people get used to it. And you don't want to make violence something that people get used to. And you don't want to remove the basic fact of violence, which is that it is awful. And
it's awful and disgusting and should like gross you out often.
Yeah, but the fact is that violence is also, you know, and Brian and I have been talking about this. Violence is also sexy. Violence is also arousing.
Sex and death.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like, just burn it down. Just, you know, just like burn it all down.
Well, I mean, there's a strong impulse for destruction, right? That it's, and
yeah, the death drive.
The death drive, yeah. And it's obviously that the Northmen is about this in lots of ways, where it's about losing yourself in an ecstatic experience.
I did at one point definitely think, like, men will literally swim away from a boat with their pregnant wife just to not have to go to therapy.
Well, it's true. You know, it's like he's never, and this becomes very obvious through his relationship with Olga, he has never allowed himself to believe that the thread of his life leads to him surviving.
Right.
Like, it's, he does like, everything in his, he's home free. Like, you're good, man. He's like, no. Still, this is wrong. I gotta go back.
I gotta do it. You know,
it's like you've got a pregnant wife now, but okay.
That's my weird. You know, it's like, you know, it's like Olga's strong. She'll be able to deal with this. You know,
but it's mirroring his father too. It shows that sort of like very stubborn, like, I have to do this for me, and everyone around him's like, but I'm also here. Then he's like, I must do, yeah.
Well, you're a prince.
Is it for him, though? Because, again,
that's true. He does. I mean, it's probably accurate they would hunt them. Yeah.
I think that you could argue that Amleth remains a weapon throughout the entire thing. He makes himself a weapon. He remains a weapon. He is always an extension of somebody else's impulse. He's always an extension of some, you know, it's like, you know, my lord, my king. My father, you know, it's like, father's weapon. I am a berserker. I am, you know, I pretend to be a thrall, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't take anything away from me to pretend to be a thrall.
Yeah.
Because I have no self.
He's
I'm a dead man. That's why he can find Draugr. The dead sword, and that's why he can wield it, because he's a dead man. He's a living dead man. He's a ghost.
I know. I do like his logic, though. Like, they will hunt you and kill you, and it's like, but bro, you'd be
but
there.
But it doesn't,
so like,
at the end of the day, what he decides doesn't matter, right? Because it's already been decided. Like,
it's already been decided. He has seen that. She will bear the woman king. She will bear the brother of the woman king. And he knows that since he's seen it, it's okay. Her weird is determined.
It's not a, so that's the knowledge he needs to die. You know, that's, but I just want to, speaking of seeing the future, in this scene, my queen, my goddess Bjork, makes a grand return to the silver screen with the Northmen in
so incredible,
like a 2-minute scene, but boy does it pack a punch. After this massacre, this, you know, abject slaughter, you know, Amleth is kind of wandering around at night, and he enters it's like a temple, and
it is a temple.
There stands Bjork in the moonlight, which I don't mean to pepper too many production anecdotes in, but the fact was that Alexander Skarsgård hadn't met with her. You know, he hadn't seen with her at all. And then he shows up to set that day, and Bjork's just standing there, you know, in the lighting, you know, with this massive headdress on and like eyeless and this stuff, and it was very intimidating. But it's
bones all over her.
Yeah.
Bone jewelry, you know. Oh my God, she's amazing. She looks like she reminds me all the stuff that she reminds me of the Morrigan, in fact. The crow goddess of the Celts. Mm. who is the goddess of revenge, yeah. but also the goddess of war.
Mm. Yes.
And a face of the mother goddess, but the face that's like, you're an idiot, and now I'm going to tell you what an idiot you are. You dumbass.
Which is much what she does in this scene.
Yeah, exactly.
More or less.
I love the tear back, you chump. The tear. The one remnant of his tenderness, you know?
The one remnant of his humanity. You know, it's like, remember when you used to think that you had a future? Remember how nice that was? Well, you still don't have a future, but I need to remind you that there's stuff you need to do. Stop fucking around.
Right. And she sets him on his path to his uncle.
I do love that, yeah, another turn is that he doesn't have the kingdom anymore.
Yeah.
And he's living in, like, bumfuck Iceland.
Which is interesting. Yeah. Like, fate has already decided, has humbled him.
Like, yeah, like, I mean, like, fate's already fucked his uncle over a little bit.
So do you really need to take revenge? Yes, you do, obviously.
Yeah, but, because he's literally,
I know,
because
he just keeps, like, he's like, nope, gotta keep doing it, no matter.
You know? There's nobody... Everybody knows that he killed his brother, and he doesn't have any meaningful power anymore. He's a farmer, you know? He's a glorified farmer, basically.
Yeah.
It's like the story of a man trying his hardest to, like, still want revenge despite everything.
Well, but he doesn't have any doubts, you know? He brands himself.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is his gift and his curse.
Yes. Is that,
he's very,
that he,
like,
never
driven to the one thing.
Yeah, he it never occurs to him that that he might be wrong. And he is wrong in so many ways, you know. Okay, so Amleth decides that having met with the witch, played by Bjork.
He's gonna give himself some tragic bangs.
Yeah, he's gonna give himself tragic bangs, he's gonna, you know, make himself look like a goofy thrall who just happens to be jacked as shit.
Yeah, like, who would buy that, really, that this guy was, you know, kidnapped?
You sure look an awful lot like a berserker, but, I mean, you've got the hair, so okay.
So fuck it. You know, and you branded yourself. It's like, that's the best, you know. And then he, like, climbs into the back of the boat and nobody notices, even though
he sneaks.
Right, that one, too. It's like, you didn't do a count.
Yeah, you can't. Where'd that gigantic dude come from?
But I guess in a world of magic, like, people wouldn't. They'd be like, whatever, it's the gods,
yeah,
anyway.
And here he meets Olga. Yes. Now, Olga of the Birch Forest, who's Anya Taylor-Joy, obviously is the Ophelia figure.
Yes, but very, like, probably in terms of analogs with Hamlet, you know, I would say she fits the least with, I mean, she's obviously the Ophelia analog, but her story is completely different from Ophelia's story in many meaningful
ways.
Well,
I mean, she's essentially a witch in training. She's essentially a shaman in training. She, you know, she practices Slavic earth magic. Going back to that whole, you have the power to break men's bones and I have the power to break men's minds. Amleth pretends to be stupid and possibly slow, you know,
which is actually from the source material. I don't know if I showed everyone the picture.
No, absolutely. And, Amleth, who pretended to be an idiot.
You know? Right, he pretended to be adult, basically,
whereas,
and then the pictures him like,
whereas what Olga pretends to be is insane. Olga pretends to be feral and insane in a I am a seer, don't fuck with me kind of way. You know, it's like, yeah, sure, I'll make your fucking, you know, I'll do your fucking laundry and I'll make your fucking, you know, food. You know, but if you think that, you know, you may be able to pin me down and rape me, but if you think that you're going to get away with it, then you are fooling yourself, buddy.
Yeah.
You know,
and she's right. I mean, that is an imposter. She will smear her menstrual blood in your face as a gesture of rejection. And she will drive your men insane with concoctions of hallucinogenics.
Fungi and hallucinogenics. Yeah. You know, she will do what she has to do. And, you know, and she sees everything, you know, which makes sense because she's Anya Taylor-Joy and she has these gigantic eyes.
They're like the size of her face.
Yeah, exactly. But she sees everything that people just skip over. You know, people are just like, oh, Thrall, yes, absolutely. You know, it's like, and she's looking at details and going, you're not a Thrall.
She knows immediately, you know, I mean, it's not.
I mean, also, to be fair, it's in this enormous.
You wonder that more people didn't notice that. But that's the whole people see what they expect to see.
Yeah.
People see what they expect to see. And Amleth is also one of those people.
Absolutely.
He sees what he expects to see. You know, he expected his mother to love his father. He expected his father to be a good man because he was his father. He expected that he was a king because he was a good man. You know, he expected Fjolnir's, the problems that Fjolnir had with his father to not be legitimate problems.
Yeah.
So the secondary aspect is that, what I'm saying basically is that there's a mirroring between Olga and Amleth and the ways that they move through the world and the way that they become partners. They become, you know, partners and kind of friends almost long before they start doing it. In fact, I think once he realizes, you know, who she is, he sort of is like, do I want to have sex with this woman? Because she's kind of scary, but you know, and I'm not sure that would lead to anything good, but yeah, eventually he does because essentially she wants it, she wills it.
That's a great scene too. Well, we'll talk about it when we get there.
And again, you know, it's like she goes along with what he has decided that he has to do, but he has to choose between being the tool of his dead father and the tool of Olga in a lot of ways. It's like that's what he has to choose between. But secondarily, have the mirroring between Olga and Gudrun.
Yes.
Olga's experience and Gudrun's experience.
Let's talk about Gudrun because we can skip around a bit. I mean, it's probably
that already. So, yeah.
I mean, the second half of the movie is just him being an indentured or a slave and then killing a bunch of people.
And finding this amazing sword.
The Nightblade.
Right, and finding a sword. Yes.
The Nightblade feeds. Great title card. One of the greats.
Those title cards are the shit. They are amazing.
In order to get it, he has to visit yet another witch. This one is a guy, because witches are equal opportunity.
And, that's right.
This is the
man-witch.
Yorick scene, which is amazing. He goes into this, I guess it's a cave or a barrow or
cave. I think.
It's like an ice cave that the guy is, you know, living in. Yeah. And
he it's a hostile interaction at first, which is what most of the spiritual figures in this tale seem to be, is hostile. But
most of these things essentially start with somebody going, hey, dumbass.
Hey, you suck. Hey, how's it going?
How are you doing, moron?
And he unveils Willem Dafoe's mummified head, which is, it's just a wonderful play on the classic, you know, he takes out the skull, Hamlet takes out the skull from the grave and it's Yorick, but in this it's a speaking severed head, which is, you know, just wonderful.
So I guess this guy is like the grave digger, essentially. He's like, that's his role, But because he's an Icelandic shaman, he is practicing a kind of shamanism which is almost Siberian, where he plays the drum and he goes into a trance and he channels Yorick's ghost. Yeah. And Yorick's ghost starts to speak through him, and we go in on the head so that Willem Dafoe's voice is coming out of Willem Dafoe's severed mummified head. And it's the shit. It's so great.
It's wonderful. And then the second, I mean, he's informed by this charming severed head that he needs Draugr, the Nightblade, which is it's a special type of sword where you have to fight a ghoul in order to obtain it. And it can only be drawn at night or at the gates of hell, which is the volcano, Hecla. And it also needs to kind of charge up a bit. It needs some blood in order to nourish it.
Yeah, you need to feed it.
You need to
blood.
Feed it. So then,
of course, because it's a blade made out of bones and cooled in blood.
Yeah, it's just wonderful. So he needs.
This is an actual thing, by the way. This is they've analyzed some Viking swords and discovered bone material inside of.
Wow.
Yeah, mixed Vikings. With iron. Yeah, I know. I know.
That's crazy.
No, it's completely nuts. And what he fights in the barrow is a barrow white more than anything else. It's like a, you know, a dead king or a dead warrior. Basically the person who wielded Draugr before him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he'll have to do the
I mean,
same
I know,
one day.
You know, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but all the intelligent stuff aside, just watching this in a theater was so fun.
Oh, it's a blast.
It's just like, oh, damn, now he's fighting this fucking skeleton thing with his big ass sword. Yes.
It's great. I mean, it really is. I mean, I saw this, opening night with my friends, and people were hyped. I mean, there was cheering after the movie, which doesn't usually. Yeah.
I mean, as much as people, you know, will crap on, you know, Marvel movies for being a ride, like this is very much a ride as well.
It's a serious ride.
It's an entertainment.
Super ride.
Yeah. But it's this this sort of choreographic battle where the undead creature, dead king, dead warrior is.
It did sort of remind me of Green Knight a little bit, specifically this part.
I haven't
part.
Seen Green Knight yet.
Yeah,
I have not. I am really behind on some of the new, not just horror movies, but some of the A24 stuff and some new movies in general, really. So I need to catch up. But
I've been rewatching a lot of stuff for comfort food. And so, yes, I mean, I felt good about myself that I was able to see The Northman and 1 week and then Everything Everywhere All at Once the next week. I was like, oh my God, I'm almost, I'm almost, almost like a normal person again. But no.
I still need to see that as well. Like, there's been a couple of movies that, I mean, I wanted to see Ambulance, the new Michael Bay movie, and Everything Everywhere All at Once, and the new restoration of Inland Empire, but it's final seasons, and you know.
I want to see that.
I do want to see Men, because I literally just can't fathom what it's about.
It seems to be a lot about Green Man imagery.
Yeah.
I'm assuming some sort of Green Man thing, but just the trailer, I'm like, what specifically?
Well, and also everybody in that village appears to be the same guy.
Is the same dude.
And
it's so
there's
creepy.
Eden references as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was a little skeptical when I saw the trailer, honestly, even though I loved Annihilation. I don't understand people who hate that movie. I thought it was a great time. And
I mean, I've watched a lot of Garland stuff. I watched the show, which I liked, but I mean, I don't want to go off on a Garland thing.
But
so.
Absolutely.
I was skeptical.
Or did I say that right? That is
Garland.
His last name,
yeah,
right?
Alex Garland.
Alex Garland.
Yeah.
But apparently the final act is very, very violent and gory, which, you know, I don't get
that
a lot.
That.
So, I mean,
nice.
I'll, I'll go see it. I mean, I don't know how to judge it because gory seems to be a very low bar for many people nowadays, but I'll definitely see it. But anyway, okay. The Northmen.
So. Yeah, so we're back
fighting the skeleton and getting a hold of Draugr. And so we move into a section where essentially every night Amleth gets up and gets a hold of Draugr and just starts cutting his way through the camp.
I love this and, first night, like, too, where it's they find them in the morning and they're just...
Oh, it's like he cut them into a horse.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I was just like, what the fuck? You made a horse out of these guys?
And the fun thing, funny, but you were mentioning it earlier, is that they think it could be Christians. They're like, their God is a corpse nailed to a tree. Maybe this is, that's the missing connection, right? But it's, you know,
who
it's
would
just...
do this? Christians, maybe. You know, they worship a dead man nailed to a tree. That's pretty fucked up.
But there's also we missed it. But there's also this game that occurs in the middle
of it. Oh, the weird sort of like field hockey.
I'm going to mispronounce this. It's Knattleikr or something like that. It's
it's basically field hockey where you're allowed to kill
people. Yeah, you just beat the shit out of people.
And kill them.
Yeah. Even sport is war. I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's just
violent. Yeah, and that's why you play it with your thralls. You play it with your teams of thralls so that they can just let loose on each other and.
You don't have to get invested.
Yeah,
I did like the reveal though, because he's showing him the club, and you think for sure, oh, they're gonna like fight to the death, and then it's just like sort of like a hockey field hockey thing
where they fight to the death.
Well, they do fight to the death. Yes,
it's a funny scene to me. I'll just and I think intentionally. So.
It's oddly funny. Yeah, I think it's meant to be oddly, maybe a little.
There's
funny.
This prevalence of like. Distanced wide shots in it where you have like Amleth with like this hockey stick and he looks like a monster and he's sort of small in the middle ground with this huge mountain behind him, but it's just the it's this ball game, but the stakes are so intense, especially when the kid, Fjolnir and Gudrun have two children.
Well, actually, Fjolnir and Gudrun have, Fjolnir's older son is the baby that he brought in at the beginning. So I don't think that...
Right, yeah, so he was already...
He may have been another woman. And then a kid of about Amleth's age when his dad was killed.
Yes.
Who...
is definitely Gudrun and Fjolnir's kid.
Yeah, and he wanders into this game to try and participate and winds up getting hurt pretty severely, and Amleth wins Fjolnir's favor by basically beating a guy to death, the guy who...
the guy who hurt his half-brother.
Yeah. Very, what, it's like a bashing, right? With his head, very irreversible, very, this sort of a brutal brunt force that's just smashing a guy to pieces. But that's how you earn medals in this world, and he's allowed to take any of the thralls as his wife. And we get this beautiful scene in the woods where there's all of this, looks like there's mating or consummations going on all around. He wanders up to Olga, who's in this very witchy crown of leaves, with the fire, and they have sex obviously, and they lie down.
I mean, I do like there's a fake out first where he's like trying to find her and there's some woman, I think, giving oral sex to someone. And he's like, is that you?
Yeah.
She's like, I'm over here, dummy.
That's right.
Even then he can't see what's in front of him. And I love the shot where they're just lying on the grass and it's the sort of patterned leaf shadows over their bodies. And it's just very, Very beautiful film. Very beautiful film.
Yeah,
very earth magic.
Yeah.
And she is very much like, you know, wow, you know, I'm glad I did that. It's like, okay, so now you're mine. And I've been helping you so far. I've noticed what you're doing, but now I'm going to really help you. And he's sort of like, good.
This is where the partnership fully takes place, and that's when the murders really start up, which we talked about the horse murder, which is wonderful, but there's also this amazing scene on, I believe, the second night where Olga, as we mentioned, she gets some fungus or mushrooms or some sort of herb and mixes it into the food, because the men are basically told to watch the camp because obviously there's some psycho who's trying to kill them.
Some Christian psycho who keeps coming.
Yeah, some Jesus freak. And they,
what animal will he make next?
Yeah, what will it be? And
doesn't Fjolnir decide with his female shaman, his vulva, they should sacrifice one of the thralls, one of the Russian thralls.
And
I think it's that beautiful dark-haired girl whose baby got thrown into the house, and later we see her singing at the Let's All Fuck in the Woods night.
Yeah, she's marked for, and she, I think she winds up singing at a funeral later on, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that's right, because she does eventually actually get sacrificed no matter what.
So she is just, that her life is rough.
Yeah, her life pure suck.
Yeah, she's just marked out for her desolation and slavery and ultimately sacrifice to her enslavers. But there's this great sequence where they're all on the rim of the farm, and there's this sort of blazing firelight, and Nose Guy, we forgot to mention, is still around. He's
still there, still doesn't have nose, a nose.
He's credited as Finnir the Nose Stub. So I do love these I do love these Viking names where it's, you know, the brotherless war raven, you know, these sort of, Giant Crusher is one of the berserkers. It's just these very, you know, they're labeled for what they do. And
yeah, isn't Giant Crusher the guy who's played by the brother of the Hound, the Mountain, from
Is that the Mountain?
I'm pretty sure that was the Mountain. Yeah,
I think it's the long hair that's
from Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
another thing I have not seen.
He's like one of, I think he might be the strongest man in the world, or he at least at some point won one of those.
Yeah, he's just a gigantic dude. He's just ridiculous.
He's just like, think of the biggest person you've ever met, and he's like 10 times bigger.
Which is a good number of the guys in this movie are just very big.
True. That is
true. You know he's big when he's like making Skarsgård look small.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is absolutely.
Which also about the relative bigness of the guys. We also get Fjolnir's son is pointedly contrasted to Skarsgård, I think, where he's very groomed, right? Like, this is the guy who.
Well, he's like a rich kid's son. Isn't
he? He's a rich guy, and he's very, and he's small and dark.
And kind of feminine in
somewhat
some
feminine, yes. You know, he strikes me as the Loki figure of the, but not smart, you know?
Yeah.
He's got one of those sort of gender fluid beards, you know, where it's sort of like, I like to wear a dress, as, you know, as the Dauphin says in Elizabeth. You know, sometimes I like to wear a dress. So, you can.
But he's a jerk, so you don't mind when he does.
Yeah, exactly. He's a total jerk. He's just, you know, he really strikes you as one of those people who embodies the hypocrisy of sacrificing your slaves. you know?
Yeah. This is who you're sacrificing for.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the hypocrisy of, you know, he has not earned anything that he has.
Right.
At least Fjolnir killed his brother.
Yeah, he took charge.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, anyway, this scene, there's, so the noseless guy is the first to lose it, I think. There's these.
Oh, this one's so harsh, yeah. Too. He just sticks the blade and then just slowly pushes in through the nose stub.
It's true. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's.
It's one of those, like, ugh.
Yeah, so all of them start going insane and hallucinating wildly and attacking each other.
And themselves. There's a lot of.
One of them stabs himself in the neck.
That's right.
Stuff going on.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Amleth is sort of like, oh, well, time to take out Draugr. Sneaking around.
Just kind of, you know, again, you
not
know.
Even sneaking around because, you know, everybody's just freaking out, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that is it a wolf pup or a fox pup he sees earlier on?
I love the fox.
It's a fox. Yeah, well, that thing is safely away.
Yeah. Follow the vixen.
But this is also.
I just thought chaos reigns.
I believe this is where he gets a moment with his mom.
Yes.
And Nicole Kidman, who hasn't said much in this film yet, gets one of those juicy monologues that she is one of the best at doing. I mean, she kills it in the scene, and it's she reveals that, you know, she was enslaved by Ethan Hawke, and he was a horrible boorish rapist who, mm-hmm. you know, basically used her as a womb for Amleth. You know,
he elevated her to his queen after she gave him a son. And, but she always thinks of herself as, you know, it's like how quickly we become princesses again after they're done with us, after we give them what they want. And, you know, she thinks of herself as a princess from Lyonesse who was stolen and, you know, enslaved and raped. And she thinks of Amleth as the fruit of that rape. And she has never loved him. And she never loved his father. And, you know, when he reveals himself to her, you know, I am your son, you know, she gets this look on her face like, that is the worst thing that I could, you know, it's like, fuck, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, a monster. How nice. My monster son. Excellent. You know, I was kind of hoping you were dead.
She reveals that she'd been laughing when, you know, early you see, you know.
Yeah, she wasn't screaming when.
Yeah, because he thinks she's getting kidnapped. Yeah.
But she's actually. She's laughing so hard that she literally needs to be carried. That's, you know, that's got to be a crushing revelation for Amleth. But
I went down on my knees and I begged him. I begged him to kill your father. Yeah. And then she starts coming on to Amleth.
Well, you know, that's.
She's like, you're so stupid, you stupid man. Yes.
Just like your father, you're an idiot.
Well, but she's just hedging her bets here, right? Like,
if you want to kill my son, if you want to kill Fjolnir's son, if you want to kill Fjolnir, then we can rule together. You know, it's like, because obviously you're just like your father. You probably want to fuck me.
I mean,
and he's just like, what?
You know? He's like, damn it, I was just going to stab someone.
Well, the whole narrative on which he's built his entire life
is a lie.
Is a lie, is what.
And I'm not entirely sure whether, you know, he gets that essentially she is like the mirror of Olga. You know, it's like Olga, from the very beginning, has been working to get herself free. And Gudrun has been fermenting in rage and fermenting in hatred.
She was on her own quest for revenge.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. That's everything is being revenge. Everything is being like, you know, it's like when I fuck Fjolnir, I'm having revenge on your father. When I, you know, when I enjoy being, you know, the closest thing that I can be to the princess that I from Leoness that I once was. You know, I am having revenge on your father. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't love my son that much. I don't love anybody that much. I don't love Fjolnir that much. But, you know, this is a lot better.
Revenge.
And I mean, there is an irony, though, to her being like, your father was so stupid, when it's like, he's like, her son is very vengeful, just like her.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
Everybody is vengeful.
I mean, yeah, that's true. The whole narrative is vengeful people.
Well, you know, I mean, that's what makes it a saga. Either of you guys actually read any of the sagas?
No, I keep meaning
I haven't, no.
I keep meaning to.
It's
I know some of it, like, very loosely from pop culture,
I mean, what Sion and Eggers have done so beautifully with this is that they have captured the entire, the things about the sagas that make them amazing and really funny in an absolutely bleak black way. There's, you know, one of my favorite moments from Njal's saga, which was the first saga that I read, is where there's these guys are fighting each other on a frozen pond, and one guy slides past another guy, and that guy gets him as he goes by and cuts his leg off. And and the guy stops and he looks down, and the guy who just cut his leg off says, "It's just as you think. There's no need to look. The leg is off." And the guy's leg just got cut off goes, "Well, I guess that's my fault for not bringing my shield." And then he fell over and died. It's like, and this movie is so much like that.
Well, but also even like the spear catch at the start of the raid, where the guy throws the spear and Skarsgård catches it and throws it right back. That's from,
it is oddly funny.
Yeah, but that's from a saga. I don't know which one.
Yes. Oh, it is.
Okay. Absolutely from a saga. You know, it's like there are things in the sagas like people, two groups of people killing each other over flensing a dead whale. You know, it's like one bunch of people found a dead whale and started flensing it, and another bunch of people showed up and they were like, "No, this is our whale because this is our beach," and then they all killed each other.
Yeah,
sounds about right.
Yep.
How it goes sometimes, you know?
Yeah, so. Sometimes it bees like that. Sometimes it just does. You know, it's like sometimes that's where the thread of your life has been woven. It's being woven so that it leads you towards that dead whale on the beach, and you just end up with nothing.
There's a lot of humor in this movie, but of a very heavy.
Pitch black.
Morbid.
Let's continue with this. Please, the next gruesome set piece, where we get to see obviously Gudrun reveals Amleth's identity, and we go. It's a great smash cut right into this torture sequence where it's a heavy close up of Skarsgård, gets punched, covered in blood. With his arms bound above him, and it's so close.
I mean, it's one of my favorite scenes in the film because it's like, yes, he's finally getting his revenge. He's yelling on the mountain, like, "Yeah, I'm gonna get my revenge!" And then he like beats up three people, and then they overpower.
That's right.
And you're like, "Well, so
well,
much for
also
that."
Because as he left, he killed Fjolnir's older son, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And he took his head, as I recall.
His heart.
And he. That's where Fjolnir wants the heart, but he won't. He just won't tell
where it is. You know, where is my son's heart? You know, it's like, not gonna tell you.
That's because he needs to keep himself alive. You know.
Yes. Yeah.
That's. But it's this. It's this. You know, he's in this kind of barn or outhouse or something,
yeah,
where
basically.
Where he's been bound and is basically being tortured, and you think, oh boy, how's he going to get out of this one?
Well, they all leave to conduct the son's funeral, right?
Yeah, and yeah. Here, fate's machinations really step in, because we have a flock of ravens.
Mm. Have some ravens.
Yeah. This is an Odin symbol, if I recall my Norse mythology correctly.
It is an Odin symbol.
There is a shot, too, where I think you're meant to think it's Odin. Yeah. Yeah.
It is an Odin symbol, later. And but also his father was called War Raven.
Yeah, that as well.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
The very, so, I mean, after the volcano, the first image is of the ravens. Great epic image, by the way. The ravens sort of flapping over the seas, and
yeah, and it's two ravens, like the two ravens that sit on Odin's shoulders.
That he sends to look over the world. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, thought and memory.
Yeah, wonderful. The mm-hmm. I always. You know, I grew up reading Greek and Norse myths. The Norse myths are so much more fun to me personally. I just, they're really, really intense and also so poetic and weird in a way that, I mean, the Greek myths are great too.
Which is kind of nice.
Sorry?
A lot less rape too, which is
yes,
kind of
less
nice.
Rape. Definitely less rape.
Yeah. Ode doesn't tend to turn himself into an object or an
shower
animal.
Oh, right. He's not like, I'm going to be a swan now and have sex with this woman.
Yeah. But it's like, what the fuck? It's like, and then I gave birth to two eggs and babies came out of them.
Loki turning into the nine-legged horse or
no,
seducing.
Loki giving birth to the nine-legged horse after
seducing.
Oh,
he gives birth, but he takes the form of a female horse at some point.
That's right, yeah. He seduces the shaggy horse of the Jotun, who is rebuilding the wall around Asgard.
It's like that Bugs Bunny cartoon.
That's right. how you like it? It's true.
It's funny. But anyway,
getting Thor to dress up in drag as
Freya. Yeah. He dress. it's one of the funniest. He marries a Jotun, right? He dresses up as this woman, and the whole time he's in the veil. And then when they get to the wedding hall, he takes off the veil and just murders
everybody with Mjolnir.
Amazing.
Surprise.
He's pecked free of his restraints by this flock of god-sent ravens, and meanwhile we're getting this Viking funeral, which is quite fantastic. Obviously this is one of the staples of Viking legend or what people know about Viking cultures. The burning of the body and all its possessions.
In a ship, in a ship, you know, and it's particularly great because, you know, they're landlocked. They're in the middle of, they're in the middle of Iceland.
Yeah, they're not, there's no sea for them to push it out on. It's just some, and there's also this animal sacrifice.
Just in a building. Yes.
Yeah, they kill a horse.
Which is quite, you know, I just kept watching this and thinking, I wouldn't have been able to do it back then, you know. I just, you know, Viking times, too harsh for me. You know, it's just constant.
Well, it was a different time. Your frame of reference would have been different
as well.
Well, exactly.
There's a particular sacrifice which was performed in Uppsala, I think, either every year or every 5 years, where you had to kill nine different kinds of animals, and the ninth was man.
Yeah.
So, and people would volunteer to be somebody who got sacrificed.
Some reference points with Midsommar here as well, which is also dealing with the Norse death cult element of, you know, that it's a good thing to willingly sacrifice yourself or dedicate yourself to death instead of, you know, this life preservation thing.
And Olga's magic is very much life oriented.
Exactly.
She's magic.
She's the other half of that diptych in a way, where Amleth is this brutally masculine tool that just drives himself toward death. And she's, you know, much more, not only just self-aware and intelligent and perceptive than he is, but also, you know, dedicating herself to preserving and continuing life, which is, you know, the
and her own survival is that. Her survival is to, you know, the preservation of her own life is her revenge against the forces that imprison her.
I love her when just after Amleth leaps the boat, we get this amazing, she lapses into old Slavic and she does this sort of very theatrical with her hands gesticulating, and
it reminds me a lot of that moment in it reminds me a lot of two things, and the first one is that it reminds me of the invocation that the witch does in V, the dead witch, when she stands in her own coffin and starts going, "I call all the werewolves. I call all the vampires." So there's that. But also it reminds me of that moment in Bram Stoker's Dracula where he starts going, "Winds!
Yes.
Winds!"
Oh yeah. Yes. When he's in the muscle bones.
Commanding. You know, she's in grief, but it's also a gesture of power, you know, and she's saying, like, "Grow me a forest of birch trees." And, you know, it's very, you know,
somewhere in the background is the, captain of the boat.
Who's like, the guy from The Witch, incidentally.
That's right.
Ralph,
he's the dad. The guy from the Witch.
I do love, Kate Dickey, who was also in The Witch, makes an appearance in this movie as well.
Yeah. She's one of the servants.
And
the sort of head female thrall.
It's just fun to see Robert Eggers's ensemble developing in real time over the years where these are the actors he's working with. But anyway, I don't know. I was moved, just to take a personal side note, I was very moved seeing this because I was, you know, I saw The Witch back in, 2016 it came out? And
I think 16.
That was a movie that, you know, it was so small and it was, you know, very modestly scaled, but it was a big moment for me, obviously, as it was for many other people of my generation. And then it's just nice to, you know, see that he's now able, I don't know if he'll be able to again, but that he's made this leap to this scale. And
like, is he going to get another Universal? Maybe not, but he's definitely still going to have a career.
Definitely a career. It's a question of, because this movie,
he may have to go back down to 30 million.
Because this, it's unclear. There's a dispute over how much this movie cost. Like, the producers insist 70 million. It was 70 million, right? But according to Eggers, because of the COVID protocols that had to be instituted, it ballooned to like $90 million, which is...
I'd buy that. I've been on film sets in COVID times, and it's a lot more. I mean, just the testing alone is expensive.
Because
you got to test every crew person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why this is, you know, it is doing well for a film that is, again, inexplicably considered art house, you know, but it's for a film that's inexplicably considered art house, its budget is also way bigger than
like four times
the size. So it's struggling to make up that difference at the moment.
I think it's just, you know, it's like, it's just growing pain stuff. Cause it's like, he's got his witch fans, he's got his lighthouse fans, and he's like, you get the sense he's at least trying to maybe mainstream a little bit more with Northman.
He said that he wanted to, you know, there was a lot of cutting going on in the editing room. And he said that he tried to deliver the most entertaining version of this movie possible. And that contrary to what people are saying, you know, he doesn't want to do a director's cut that expands it. You know, he wanted to create a blockbuster movie. That's what he wanted to do. Yeah. So, I mean,
Well, and it's super entertaining from my point of view, but absolutely. It's difficult. It's difficult to create a blockbuster these days in any way except corporation.
I mean, just in general, yeah. The only stuff that's doing well is like Spider-Man.
That's already recognizable.
Which is depressing.
Right. It's depressing, but it's just the way that it is right now.
I don't think I have to believe, not to keep talking about this, but you know, just because everybody should be rooting for the Northmen right now, whether you like it or not, it's you should be rooting for stuff like this.
No, it's sort of like how I think even a movie, even a like R-rated horror movie I don't like that's an original property, I always want to support because that gets more off the ground.
Yeah, me as well.
So, you know, like if Northman does well, I mean, the other thing though is like, I bet it'll do well. I guess streaming would be the big thing nowadays.
Well, streaming is the big thing nowadays. And I think it's really stupid not to pour that shit in right at the beginning. I think it's dumb.
Yeah,
it's dumb to insist on theatrical being the lead.
It's
right, because it's no longer really the lead.
You know, and there are a lot of people who aren't going to go see them. You know, it's like somebody was talking on Twitter the other day about, well, I'm really glad that it's coming out on VOD. I don't see that as a as shameful, because now I can watch it with my grandmother, who is way too weak and way too compromised to go to a theater, but really is a huge fan of Abs and Ass.
I mean, like, you know, so as a fetishizer of the theatrical experience, I love a movie theater, and for some films,
listen, I'm a huge Church of Scorsese person. All right, you know, huge.
And there are some films that are best experienced to me on.
I do think Northman benefited from seeing it. I mean, I would have watched on demand, but I'm glad I got to see it.
Unless you can see it on a wall, you're going to miss some shit, and that's just the truth.
Yeah, but as somebody who also is a cinephile, who is, you know, I like most of the movies I love, I've had to watch at home on streaming or on Blu-ray or home video options simply because,
or even on your laptop.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, there are certain movies that are inaccessible anywhere else at this point, right? So
thanks, F'd Up Movies.
Thank you, F'dupmovies.com. We got to get them to sponsor us at some point or something.
No, I don't. That's a whole legal can of worms.
Yes, it is. It is a whole legal can of worms.
They benefit from anonymity. but
that's true.
Thank you all the same, F'dupmovies.com. But I'm sure the Northmen will be showing up there any minute now. But to see a movie on streaming or at home, it's not like an inherent diminishment of the film. Or people's experiences of the film, which is what's most important, right? Is that people see the movie at the end of the day.
I mean, I got an enormous 4K TV now, so if we got a sound system, like, it wouldn't be theatrical, but
yeah,
it's
we
so
just
big.
Got a big TV as well, and it's like,
nice.
It helps. But you know, even if
I feel like I hopped into the future, because I'm like, 4K, who gives a shit about 4K? And now I'm that guy that's like, is it in 4K?
Oh my God.
But even like my mutual on Twitter, Dante, he watches movies on his DS at points sometimes, and it's like,
oh, okay,
that's a little small scaled, but you know what, you know, it's just technology.
I watched The Medium the first time on my phone.
Yeah,
I could not believe that I was doing it, but I loved it so much that it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I guess that's, you know, breaking the Luddite back of things for me as a 53-year-old cinephile, of 54, sorry. I am now 54. Anyway, let me just go back for a second so Amleth, is freed by the ravens, but he's still in pretty bad shape. Thankfully, he hallucinates that he is borne away by a Valkyrie.
Yes.
On a flying horse, but actually it's Olga.
Yes.
bearing his beaten up ass away.
imagine that journey, you know? Jeez.
I'm sure it was a lot of dragging.
I'm sure there was, and I am so proud of her, because I wouldn't have been able to hump, you know, Amleth onto the back of a horse. That's insane. But I
have to think there was some sort of like police system. Yeah. Or...
I love the idea that, you know, one of the reasons that he sort of admits that he has fallen in love with her, and that, you know, it's a real thing for him, is because he's identified her in his vision as a Valkyrie, that she has become a Viking in his eyes, and so their cultures have kind of met in that way. But the problem is that this vision of her as a Viking is the thing is lurking in the back, I think, of his decision to go back, it's sort of like, you know, on the one hand, it's what binds him closer to her. And on the other hand, it's what reminds him that that's where he needs to go, that that is the beautiful death that he is chasing.
Yeah. Which is not what she wants for him.
Not at all. You know,
she allows him to do it, but it's not.
How could she stop him? I mean, it's hard. Yeah. You know,
like, they both have a single-minded purpose. You know, yes. Each one of them, but they respect each other's visions for themselves in a weird way,
yep,
albeit reluctantly.
But anyway, eventually this film ends up in hell.
Yeah, it's
as you would expect.
First off, I do love the scene where he's on the slopes of Hecla, which is the volcano, mm-hmm. and he sees he kills his mother and her son.
Yeah, his mother tries to kill him, and he stabs her because he reacts, you know.
And then he sort of, accidentally kills the son.
Because the son tries to kill him for killing his mother.
But yeah, he is, like, stabbing him in the back, exactly. I think, so.
And he finds their corpses on the slope of the mountain, sort of buried in ash, and it's just one of the most powerful images for me from the film, that the sense of human waste and tragedy, and it's good, it's rich stuff. But he plows ahead, and in, you know, the sort of flaming hellish landscape, although hell not with two L's in this case,
definitely the land of hell of Loki's daughter with Angerboda, the half corpse,
queen scary
of the underworld. My, you know, as he was going up the mountain, and as they, you know, move into the, I'm going to fight you bare assed on the steps of the lava flow. I turned to my husband and I said, why are they naked? And he said, well, if they burn up.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just practical. You
know? Purely practical. Although there is, I mean, it would have been more blatant if Robert Eggers had been allowed to show the dong he wished to show. Yeah. But all the same, there's such an erotic charge to the violence for these men. I mean, it's just really, it's the moment where their reason for being comes into focus for them, you know? It's combat, it's death, but it's also kind of a glory in just battle, right? And
Fjolnir in a weird way has been, you know, like attempting to be a man of peace, attempting to be a man who is enjoying his lower status, you know, doesn't have to be a king, doesn't have to be a war leader.
Sets him aside from Orran Vandil, or Vandil, rather.
Yes,
Ethan Hawke.
War Raven.
Yeah, where he doesn't seem to want to be a conqueror, you know, which is...
Yeah, well, that's probably his Slav blood, obviously. He just wants to farm like a fucking farmer.
Yeah, and maybe one of the reasons that Gudrun is at least has solidarity with him in some way. But it's, I mean, he gives it his all in this scene. They do go at each other pretty hard. And on some level, I think Fjolnir may be aware that he's going to die this way. I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I think at that point, he doesn't have anything to live for, really.
He doesn't give a fuck. I mean,
his farm is destroyed. His wife and children are dead.
His wife and child are all his children are dead. And his wife is dead.
Yeah, his thralls burned down his farm. You know, they've run off into the...
Like, he really doesn't have anything to go back to.
So he's ready to... And of course, in a very... Based on what you've told us of the sagas, this is a very saga-esque death. They simultaneously, he stabs Amleth, and Amleth decapitates him in one move.
It's a really cool
shot. It's almost like Amleth allows himself to be stabbed through the chest so that he can get close enough to decapitate him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, yes, you're right. It is total Viking theater. It's like, yeah, okay. It is just as you think. There is no need to look. The head is off. The head is off, and yes, you're gonna die. And then we
he collapses.
Cut to him on the
on
the ground, and in his eyes, though, you see the Valkyrie riding him up to Valhalla.
Well, you also see that Olga bears his babies. You know, the lineage will be passed on,
and he will be remembered. The poets will tell of him. You know, her voice will. Can
speak his
you know
name.
We'll speak his name and we'll make sure that this very sad fucking story of useless revenge comes down to us.
That's the question ultimately, is that is his revenge useless, because he accomplishes what he was raised to believe he had to accomplish, and he will live on in that way.
You know, I think interestingly, we say, you know, wouldn't it be great if he survived and he went with his wife and his kids and, you know, he was like a normal human being. And if people came to kill them, then he would be able to fight for them. But you see, in Amleth's world, him becoming a saga, him becoming a story, of glorious revenge,
the best ending you could get.
Yeah, and it will keep her safe.
Yeah.
So instead of just being a pregnant thrall...
Who's alone.
She will be the widow of Prince Amleth.
Yeah.
The widow of Prince Amleth, the son of whatever the fuck his name is, War Raven.
Yeah.
Killer of Fjolnir, the brotherless.
And a living... carrier of that history as
exactly,
well.
Exactly. So that's why, you know, her children end up on the tree. You know, the Yggdrasil, the tree of kings. And that's how she becomes a Viking. She becomes, you know, which is, I mean, the whole thing, the whole idea of the Rus being different from the Vikings is very funny, because the Rus were Vikings as well. Russia was founded by Vikings. You know?
Right.
There's a very, even her name kind of implies that perhaps that her daughter, the female king, could possibly turn out to be somebody like Olga of Kiev, you know.
Yeah.
Who is not only known as a proponent of insane revenge, but also one of the first saints, Russian saints.
Yeah, I mean, it's from a Viking perspective, this is a
happy-ish
ending.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
which
a happy
is why, and I don't because. Again, I like the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do sometimes have a little difficulty with this common interpretation that's going around, where it's like, oh, it's a critique of masculinity and revenge, right?
No, it isn't.
Which is like, I guess.
You know, it's funny, like, okay, I was talking to you about the fact that I went to see A Clockwork Orange a lot when I was like 13, 14. And in retrospect, I look back on that and I go, oh, Gemma, come on, you know, but even watching a movie like A Clockwork Orange, right? The first level is that you are located in the perspective of an unrepentant rapist and thug. Yeah. And the level underneath that is, but you get that that's bad, right?
You know? Yes, yeah.
You get that, you know, the fact that he's totally happy with who he is not a good thing, right?
Right.
You know? And then the third level is, but I'm going to make you feel as though you're kind of enjoying it and you'll feel bad about that.
Yes, yeah.
And that is my plan. Stanley Kubrick, you know, it's like, and you have to look at stuff like that and go like, is it telling you that it's great to be a Viking? Is it telling you that it's wonderful to believe these things?
No,
it's not telling you that at all.
The film is, so there's this panic about white supremacists will see this film and like it, right?
I mean, white supremacists have already co-opted fucking Norse culture, so we're past that being like anything we can stop.
So the thing is, the truth of the matter is, yes, fascists like this movie. And yes, if you're a fascist and you don't have that voice where you're going to know that this is obviously not the hey, you should live, right?
Yeah, there are five different wife killers who've quoted Gladiator in their suicide notes.
But it's not the movie, you know?
Because
you need to, we all know as enlightened people, members of civilization and everything, you know, we don't want to live in an unending cycle of revenge and violence and rape and pillaging, I assume. Most of us are aware that isn't.
No, although the reason I have red hair is because of the Vikings. So take of that what you will.
I'm Irish all the way down. I'm Irish all the way down on my father's
I know,
side.
But I got the red hair. And the red-haired Irish, that is the Norse. Like, there were not redheads in Ireland before the Vikings came.
Liam Neeson's profile tells you where. That there, if Liam Neeson's profile alone would tell you that that Vikings made it to Ireland.
Of course. No, yeah. I mean, it's in my family, certainly. Mm-hmm. But it's, regardless, so do I think, like, the story, you know, ultimately, does it challenge Amleth's viewpoint? No, it's that Robert Eggers' whole thing is that he reconstructs the worldviews of the past. You know, that's what he does, right?
Right.
And you don't need to have your hand held throughout the film, you know, to know that this is wrong, you know, obviously.
I mean, I think the issue lately
is
that, like,
you know, it's like, it's hard.
Yeah. I think the issue is lately so much has to be a symbol.
Right.
So much has to stand in for the current society. So, you know, if you're doing your Viking film, oh, it has to comment on society now, mm-hmm. which I think people are throwing when it doesn't.
Well, so, you, I mean, the,
how
it does.
The Vikings have seen our society coming.
Right, like, what the fuck? Is it they're going to have, like, a fake cell phone? Like, how are you going to comment on it?
That's the thing. It's like,
no, that's,
I mean,
not even that. It's the idea that individuality would become such a huge fucking thing. The idea that people would, that people would have so little respect for their own parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that the very idea of, you know, living and dying the way that Amleth lives and dies seems ridiculous to a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's
way beyond morality. Way beyond morality, it seems ridiculous.
Yeah. It's, I mean, so that's the, about Robert Eggers' films, I mean, they ask you to inhabit that worldview for an hour and 20 minutes or rather. And
I've never seen a Robert Eggers film and went, you know what? That man really wants me to be a witch. Or, right. You know what? That man really wants me to work in a lighthouse.
So, like, my thing,
it really makes me want to fart constantly.
Right. That portrayal of a man constantly getting farted in the face and having shit blow into his face. Yeah, that seems appealing.
The thing is, it's like, so, well. But,
it did kind of make me want to fuck a mermaid, but that's me.
It's, you know, I mean, I feel like The Witch and The Lighthouse are definitely more deconstructive in certain ways. Whereas,
yes.
This, I mean, okay, I tweeted about this, but I do think ultimately this film primarily encourages within the world of the film an identification with Amleth's death drive, basically. That's what. And yeah. I don't think, you know, obviously aspects of that are going to lend themselves to a fascist reading, but I don't think anyone's like, it's not like people are going to walk out of this turned fascist as a result. You know, we're all adults. We all know that you shouldn't kill yourself in a battle for revenge or everything. And it's just a well-constructed cinematic experience. I mean, that's what's important to me at the end of the day, right? When I saw
it's beautiful. It is a physically beautiful film. Every inch of it, every strategic decision, everything that.
I mean, even the landscapes he chooses, you know, the Iceland and the,
yeah, so good.
Russia
human. It's human. I mean, it's connecting to. I mean, that's what Robert Eggers really is all about. Is that he tries to. He's tapping into really long traditions, you know, long-term traditions of storytelling and belief system, and the belief that those still resonate, even if we don't share that worldview or we don't believe that, you know, believe in those things. Like, I don't believe in God. I'll be damned if The Witch doesn't fill me with the fear of God or of the devil, or you know,
and the great dread.
Oh, I love The Exorcist, and I don't believe in God.
Well, this is the thing, and you know, it's like that is also part of the empathy machine aspect of cinema. Jesus Christ! I mean, you know, that is also part of the empathy machine to put you in a place where you would not want to be. But you
and don't think we should be.
Yeah, and don't think we should be, but to have you be there for 2 hours or so in the dark, you know, dreaming the dreams of another culture, dreaming the dreams of another place, of another time, you know, so that when you look back on every era of human history, you don't say, oh, look at those stupid people in their weird clothes and their, you know, it's like those dumb people who didn't even know that cell phones would exist at some point.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know what TikTok is, and they believe
in witches.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and make you go, no, people are people. People have always been people.
That's what I always take away from his film.
That, you know, it's like so many people just want to think that they're good, and they do horrifying things in the name of thinking that they're good. And that has not changed. It has
ever
changed.
Nope.
And that's a special thing to get at the AMC lately, you know?
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, The Northman. I mean, Robert Eggers, you know, I really...
It's hard to fail with Robert Eggers so far.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't missed for me, even as he's... You know, he's done... The films are similar in many ways, but they're also very, very different in lots of... You know, this is really a mainstream-ish movie.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to see him work in those modes. And I just am very much looking forward, because I've been reflecting, because, you know, I grew up with all of those A24 horror movies, and they were a big part of my adolescence, right? And I've been looking back through and rewatching them to seeing which are the ones that are the most meaningful, and taken in total, I think Robert Eggers really is one of the most exciting filmmakers for me that's working today, you know. So
yeah.
I can't, you know, The Witch is probably my favorite of those films still of that.
I do think it's funny. Recently he said, like, he looks back on The Witch and he, like, cringes.
Yeah, he doesn't like The Witch is what he said.
Well, but you know what? I've listened to the commentary he did for Lighthouse, and he's very self-critical.
Yeah. And also,
like, he's one of those people that'll be watching the movie like, oh, we were trying to get that to happen, but that didn't happen in this show.
Exactly. I mean, it's such a very, very different way of doing things, and you have to be holding 50,000 things in your head at the same time, and you're at the mercy of weather, you're at the mercy of light, you're at the mercy of time. And
of your bosses.
Yeah, I mean, of your bosses.
That
yeah.
was the
of money, you know.
The shooting of this film, as arduous as it sounds, wasn't that bad. But,
yeah.
You know, he was interviewed for The New Yorker, and he had gray hair, and they were like, was it the movie? And he said it wasn't the shooting, it was the editing. Like, where it was going notes back and forth with the studio, and you don't have coverage because they shot on film, so they don't have, like, other angles to take. But what he said that makes me feel good for him is that he said with this one he really feels like he's finally a movie director. You know, that he said that with the other two, kind of proving himself, trying to, like, asking to be looked at as a movie director, and now he feels like he can really just direct a movie, you know, just go and do it. So I'm looking forward to whatever he does next. I know Nosferatu isn't happening at the moment, unfortunately, because that would be so cool.
Oh, that's
but
I still think that Anya should have been Nosferatu. I think that would have been the best.
She has the eyes.
She has the eyes. Yeah, not that Willem doesn't have the eyes, but he's already played Nosferatu. Come on.
He has. You know, in some levels, it's like we've had like 3 or 4 versions of Nosferatu at this point. Like, I'm sure Robert Eggers would do an amazing job, but, you know, he had a medieval epic that was planned, The Night, that I'd love to see him do that, or any other. I'm just excited to see what hidden world he opens up to me next, you know.
Hells so yes. Oh, by the way, I will suggest something to you.
Yes.
On Tubi, there is a film called Il Primo Re, The First King. The First King. And it's the story of Romulus and Remus. But they're being shown as like Neolithic Latin tribesmen. And it was shot entirely in antique Latin, the oldest form of Latin they could find.
Wow.
Yeah. That's... So seriously, check it out.
Yeah, I will. I'm adding it to the watch list right now. And just good to know that there's still enough insane film directors that will either try to film their film in antique languages that are no longer spoken, or rebuild a Viking longship exactly as it was built in that time. And
I'm sure the studio loved it.
Absolute fetishism.
They're like, you know, Robert, we don't have to actually make the ship. We have this thing called CG
now.
No,
no, no, no, no.
He's like, no.
We'll make it. <That's> We're going to make it.
We need, that's what, we need the fetishists back at
that's
the cinema.
Right. That's but, exactly it.
I need this horse penis, damn it.
The funny part is I think he was able to find the horse penis, but he had to make the ship.
That's funny. That's just funny. And Menace, you know, and I believe one day he will get a dick in his movies. He's fighting for it. He wants it to happen.
I bet he might get maybe a little dick in his next
just
one.
Maybe
just the silhouette, or like just the top.
The top part of the dick.
The sad part is not, I mean, dick should have been in this film, but in The Lighthouse, what he wanted to do was have a match cut from an erect penis to the lighthouse. And I'm just sad.
Oh, all right.
I didn't get to see that match cut.
Oh, my God.
But
I do sort of understand why they were let's not do that.
I saw a film the other night called The Long Night. in which a woman is essentially like a female Antichrist. And there's a flashback to the moment of her conception. And at one point her mom is like lying in a swamp and literally opens her legs and there's a mirror stuck in her vagina. So wow. you get this, you know, so where's that light coming from? Oh, it's my vagina. It's like, I want to see the peen version of that.
Somebody's got to do it. Somebody will step up.
Exactly.
I think soon. Someday soon.
All right. On that note.
But yeah, that's going to wrap it up, I think. We're obviously on Twitter at Celluloid Sits, anchor.fm/CelluloidSits. Mm-hmm. Good to be back.
Yeah, season 3. Wow. Time passes so quickly.
I know. I don't know if anyone heard, but there was, at one point, I don't know what the fuck it was. It sounded like an enormous plane went by, perhaps military, because it's. I almost thought it was an earthquake.
I did not hear that, if that was on the
system. Yeah, well, I kept fairly quiet, so I can hopefully edit out the scary-ass noise where I was like, is the world ending? What's happening?
Not so far.
Not yet. I mean, slowly. Yeah, it's very, very slowly. But yes, anyway, for Celluloid Citizens, I'm Sean M. Thompson.
I'm Brian O'Connell.
And I, as ever, am Gemma Files.
Here's to season 3, everybody.
Yeah. And if you get a hold of that Nightblade, don't use it during the day.